Welcome to
Mile High Hockey Lab.
Mile High Hockey Lab.
Hello and welcome to Mile High Hockey Lab, a podcast brought to you by MileHighHockey.com. My name is Adrian Hernandez. I am your host. On today's episode, Lab Number 2, we have a new host, someone that you will see here and there from time to time when he decides to drop in with us. Jacob Windling, why don't you tell us a little about yourself, brother?
It's Windling. That's okay. That's the most common mispronunciation.
Wow. Yeah. This guy.
That's how everybody introduces me. It's par for the course. I grew up in Denver, so born and bred Avalanche fan. When I was 8 years old was when they moved to Denver, and my family got season tickets to them, so I went to just tons of games in the 90s. Went back east for college and lived in Boston for about a decade. UMass Amherst is where I went, and so when Cale Makar showed up, that was like a big old jolt to my Colorado Avalanche fandom, and now this is just, you know, living the dream, basically. All hail Cale. Go UMass tonight. Sorry, DU fans.
Should touch on the ring ceremony and the banner night. So we'll start with you, Evan. Tell me a little bit about what you think about how the Avalanche organization handled celebrating the cup on night number one.
Well, I mean, this was my first banner raising night. I was not around for 1996 or 2001. So, you know, I can't really speak from what happened back then, but, you know, at least I thought it was amazing. It was so awesome. I mean, really just a cool, surreal experience. I mean, as you can see, you know, down here, at least Jacob is at least under me in our Zoom call. The banner was raised and, you know, just singing All the Small Things, Mark Hoppus. I mean, it was amazing. I loved it. It was awesome. You know, even though I'm a broke college student, my wallet still hates me for going to the game, but it was awesome. It was something you know, you couldn't miss it. So just happy that it happened and that, you know, the game afterwards, you know, went well too.
Yeah, and I had an absolute blast that night too. As if you can tell, my voice is still a little bit hoarse from screaming at the top of my lungs when they were raising that banner. So I'll move on to you, Ezra. If you had to pick, what was your favorite moment of how all of that went?
Oh, I mean, it's hard to pick because the rings are so cool and seeing them come out is incredible. But the palpable joy in the arena came through watching it on TV when the banner was going up. So that's hard to beat. That's pretty cool. The whole, you know, everyone celebrating together like that is pretty amazing.
Yeah, and what did you guys think of Landeskog inviting Johnson out off the bench and out of the Chicago locker room to watch the banner go up with his teammates? What did you think of that?
That's beautiful.
Yeah,
and I mean the imagery of, like, you know, all these red and blue sweaters standing around the banner, and then you have the one white sweater, you know, off to the side. Like, that's just, it's just like really cool visuals that they were able to put together with that.
It's something you can't really beat, to be honest. Like, mm-hmm. if you could have written it, it's kind of how you would have written it. And I think it speaks to just how close they all were as a group of men trying to achieve one goal. It's like, even when, you know, night number one, the home opener is an important game. You got to win. And I think, I mean, the Avs were probably pretty comfortable even before the game started, thinking that they would secure the victory. But at the same time, you know, like, Nazem Kadri left the group chat with no freebies and just left the group chat. So it's like these guys, when it's between the whistles, like, they got to get back to work. And all of is lost. So I thought it meant and showed that the group was, like, very, very close. And I think that's probably true about most cup-winning teams. But I do think that this team in particular was probably uniquely close based on the dichotomy of what they went through together throughout their careers as individuals. What was your takeaway from the game itself, Jacob?
I mean, pretty much what we expected, right? Like, that whole first period, I thought the first line was just like a force of nature. I mean, it seemed like they spent the entire first period in Chicago's zone. And that game was just the clearest example of, you know, the trends that these two teams are on, where, you know, the Avs are the cup favorite and Chicago is, you know, selling everything that isn't bolted down and some stuff that is bolted down to try to get the number one pick.
And everything that's bolted down and not, I love it. That's a great way to put it. And I think like you're totally right. And at one point it kind of felt like the Avs were kind of playing with their food a little bit. So I totally agree with you. I think it was just kind of like one of those things where we kind of knew the outcome heading into everything. So Evan, let's talk a little bit about the ring ceremony and the display that they got the rings with the box and the video and the music and the voiceover from Connor McGahee. What did you think of those?
Epic. I mean, first off, shout out Connor McGahee.
Yeah.
Awesome dude. Great, great voice. Great voice over the airwaves. Great, you know, that his voice in that radio call in those final seconds, they did it. They did it. It's just beautiful. It was remarkable. And I mean, the ring in there itself was like $12,000, if not more. You know, at least it was $12,000 on the Avs website when they were selling them. You know, I went and looked. I was never going to buy them, but I explored. And
your wallet was looking at you like, yeah, right, bro. You're not that guy. You're not that guy, pal.
Nah, but I mean, point being that not only is it worth a lot, obviously financially, but it is also worth so much when it comes to the experience and remembering and the memories that came from that run. And, you know, the ring ceremony a couple nights before opening night and then opening night itself is the end of that. It's a quote unquote end of that memory.
Right.
You know, it kind of wraps it all up in a bow. And I think that only kind of encourages the Avs to do the exact same thing again this year.
Yeah, and did you notice, to me, it looked like when Landeskog kissed the cup, when he put it down after skating it around the arena, it looked more like a goodbye for now, my sweet princess.
Yeah, I'll see you soon.
Yeah, yeah. It was, and it's funny to me because it's gotten to the point now where as a group and like among the leadership of the Avs, they're so predictable, but in an awesome way. Like last year throughout the playoffs, they were getting prodded like they had been by Vegas years before. And McKinnon would just get up and have zero reaction. And I think like that's what you wanted to see from this group going into the playoffs, was this maturity and resolve that comes as a result of losing, to be honest with you, and losing in emotional ways. And so, yeah, I thought that was really cool. And what did you guys think last night of Kadri being delivered his ring by Nathan McKinnon and Jared Bednar and company?
Yeah, that was really cool. You know, all the you know, snapshots like the Avs were tweeting out, you know, a generic face-off between McKinnon and Kadri. Right. Just like everything last night was just like tugging at the heartstrings, mm-hmm. where it's like, oh man, like this is – it was bittersweet is how I would define it. Very happy for this guy. You know, you get to relive the memories, you know, one of the greatest overtime goals in the history of the Colorado Avalanche franchise, you know, the whole nine yards with him. But he's, you know, he is a self-described enemy. He left the group chat, right, said yeah. No freedom. So like, you know, there's a part of you that's like, all right, game on now.
Screw yeah, well, and that was my thing, like with my family, my brothers and my dad are big fans as well. And I, you know, they're not quite, obviously they don't host podcasts, so they're not quite as like involved with the day-to-day stuff of the Avalanche, but they all were like, oh man, this sucks, because I know I'm gonna hate him. Like, it's gonna take, especially if we play them in the playoffs, which is a pretty viable possibility, that is gonna get heated quickly, and it's almost gonna be more heated because he was an Avalanche. I don't even think he's going to play. He would play against the fucking Bruins, pardon my French, with the kind of tenacity he'll play the Avalanche going forward for the rest of his career. Because I think he's kind of put that chapter behind him successfully by winning the cup with Colorado. Yeah. So,
well, and I mean, you figure that he's probably feeling a little slighted too.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of how he's motivated himself his whole career is, you know, these guys are doubting me. These guys are doubting me. And, you know, he said all the right things about the Avs organization, and I believe him. But at the same time, you know, they didn't want to pay him what he thought he was worth.
Yeah.
There's probably part of him that's a little upset about
for
that.
For sure. And if you think about how, and Ezra, maybe you can speak a little bit on this, but how do you think he felt given that Nichushkin and Lehkonen were seemingly prioritized pretty quickly in the offseason in comparison to maybe working with Kadri?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think Jacob's right on with the slight. That's a perfect word because he has motivated himself that way before. And I think we saw it last night in Calgary. He was up to his old tricks. He ran into our goalie. He drew some penalties by embellishing. He was doing his thing, you know, and I love Naz. And obviously as a fan of the Avs, when he's on the Avs, all those things are beautiful. But watching it on the other side, I'm like, I kind of,
yeah.
Kind of get where the Blues are going.
yeah, sheesh, right? Isn't that something? But, it's funny how the
it
world
sure is,
works
but you know, way. he's definitely as much as you can look at the roster and understand, like, okay, yeah, they needed to spend some money on the wings because center depth is already there. Nobody's going to say, but nobody who's a professional hockey player isn't going to say, except for me though, they should pay me though, they should want me.
Yeah,
and. Yeah, I'm sure he's motivated by that.
Yeah, and there's no way, no matter what Kadri does, I'll have more disdain for him than I do Jordan Binnington. So I think he's going to be on
there.
Oh,
yeah. Of course.
Kadri's achieved a little sense of royalty in Colorado.
I think so, like, yeah.
It's hard to envision us ever fully turning on him.
So tell me this. If it's one of those situations where Kadri leaves and then goes on to win cups with other teams, or maybe even multiple cups with one team, say Calgary, for example, that happens. Do you think that will stay the case because of the story with the St. Louis series and all of that? Or do you think the more success he has elsewhere, the less, the more will be like the ugly ex, you know, like, will that be us if he has a better career going forward? Or do you think that he'll always kind of will be his first kind of vibe?
I mean, I think it depends on how that happens, because it's like, you know, say the Avs get knocked out by the Wild or something, and then he beats the Wild. We'll be rooting for Calgary over that. Yeah. But, you know, if he scores 3 game-winning goals in a 7-game series against the Avs, we're going to feel a little bit differently about him, right?
And so will he, I'm sure, after the likely vitriol he'd get in return from Avs Nation. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I thought it was really cool that despite you know, they had a game and it didn't go the Avs way. And clearly the Avs didn't have their legs early. I thought it was cool that Bednar and McKinnon still did their thing and went and showed him his ring, gave it to him in prison. And you could tell even among in that video, even among them, they still have a mutual respect that kind of goes unspoken. And I think at the end of the day, that's what winning the cup's all about. Yeah, I was creating these bonds with people that you just look at them and you have this unspoken achievement together and you go into the future knowing that, and it gives you a little bit more confidence. So I was really excited. I thought the Avs absolutely crushed. I didn't think like they took it too far. I didn't think we got like anything cheesy or corny. I think they took care of business. They put the banner where it was supposed to go. I loved that they didn't do what some teams do, which is hang it above the ice for the game. And then when you come to the next game, it's in its designated spot. I thought it was quite a WWE style trick to put that thing from the ice into its designated spot. That was pretty sweet. So congratulations again to the champs, the 2022 champs, which brings us to our poll, which I thought was kind of a fun poll. This was before we had any hockey to talk about. So I was like, how can I come up with something fun to talk about? So here is that the poll of the week says, Banner Night is just a sleep away, as it was then. Which championship team would win a round robin? The 96 champs, the 01 champs, or the 2022 champs? Evan, we'll start with you. Who gets your vote?
Yeah, I voted 2022, and the sole reason was because they have a person named Cale Makar on their team. That was my main reasoning behind that. When you have a defenseman who has helped kind of morph what is now known as today's defenseman, where you jump into the play and you have these offensive traits along with a stellar defensive record. You know, sorry, but the 96 champs and the 01 champs, they don't have that capability. And, you know, that comes with obviously the change in, you know, where hockey has gone to nowadays. It's not the same, you know, nitty gritty. You're going to get a brawl, you know, at the end of every single game, or your benches clearing or something like that. You know, that's it's not like that anymore. So I think, you know, just Cale Makar would just be the main difference there in winning that round robin for the 2022 champs.
Okay. And I would agree with you. I would wonder one thing, though, is could everything you just said about Cale Makar also be said about Patrick Waugh and his impact in between the pipes? Because if you think about it, in 01, he, as great of a team as they were, which they were a very good and deep team, there were a lot of games, especially in the playoffs, where Waugh absolutely saved them. Ezra, maybe you can speak a little bit about that. And moreover, what kind of matchups would be presented to us in the event that these three teams would play, and which one would have your eye the most?
Man, I mean, the Patrick Waugh question is a great one, because he obviously is amazing and had the ability to change a game just, you know, from the goal, which Darcy Kuemper was good. Paolo Francouz was good, but they're not that guy, obviously. But frankly, like, if they played with modern rules, I don't think there's any chance 01 or 96 would hang with with 22. Like, the speed that these guys play with, everything. I mean, watching the top lines match up, I think that would be like an honest competition. But then lines 2 through 4 are just going to smoke the old
right
guys.
And then there's the 2-line pass rule, right? Which is,
yeah,
you're going to be able to stretch the ice in a way that those guys were never had to be prepared for, which is like what weaponizes something or someone like Cale Makar or Nathan MacKinnon. We saw it last night. I mean, I don't think Gorgiev thought he was going to find MacKinnon racing up the boards and get an assist, but that's exactly what happened, and all he did was dump it out of the zone, and back in the day, that would have been considered a pass, and it would have been not viable. So, yeah, that's a great point. You talk about the rules. And, you know, Jacob, you tell me who's getting the better of this matchup. We'll say we'll put forward a hypothetical rule set. We're in the clutch and grab era.
Ooh.
Who wins this matchup? Landeskog versus Forsberg.
So if we're in the clutch and grab era, I'm going to give the slight edge to 2001 Avs, just because like a guy like Adam Foote knew every single trick to pull in the clutch and grab era. And so like, Ezra, I think you bring up a good point about the rules era, where like Adam Foote is a number one defenseman in the clutch and grab era, but right now, absolutely not. Like, there's no way that he, like, like he'd get roasted. Like, he'd be in the penalty box, like, you know, two times.
Nate Gannon nowadays.
Yeah. I do think that, like, if these two teams were to match up, just generally, I still give a slight edge to 2001 team. You know, 538 last year, actually, I think that was their ELO rating. Found that the 2022 team paced a little bit ahead of the 2001 team, but
interesting
that 2001 team had just gone to war with the Red Wings for like 5 or 6 years. Like, you get, you know, those two teams inside the crucible of the playoffs. And I just think that 2001 team, you know, you have Ray Bourque chasing the cup too. They've got more metal, they've got more experience. And then you add that, you know, clutching and grabbing is legal. I think that 2001 team just edges out 2022.
And what's funny too, is like, I don't think this is in any way disrespectful to the 96 team that they're so low in this. I think it shows that they were kind of, and this isn't, again, not a slight to them, but circumstances kind of paved the way for them in facing Florida in the final. I think that played a big role. And, you know, they were a great team as well. But I think it's almost like if the 2022 Avs would have actually won in 2019, that's what the 96 Avs feel like to the 2001 Avs. Like, they were baby Avs, and they still pulled it off. And I think the stars were aligned in a way that really benefited them to do so. Whereas in 2001, they were like grizzled veteran, had seen it all in terms of their core, And they had been through, like you mentioned, so much in facing the Red Wings and in the playoffs with other rivalries like the Stars at the time, that it just kind of all came together, and they were that really, really good, elite, legendary Avalanche team. Like,
yeah, plus like that 2001 team had Ray Bourque and Rob Blake, right. So like that's, you know, the forward groups, when you compare them, they are pretty comparable. Like, you know, Claude Lemieux turned into Mario Lemieux in the playoffs back in the 90s, right. And so like you go through the forward comps in 96 and 2001 are similar. Defense, it's not even a contest between those two teams.
Yeah, and another interesting thing to think about is the salary cap, because in 01 and 96, I don't think technically there was a salary cap.
Oh, no.
There were just four teams spending more than anybody else.
Yeah, so if that were true, like it is about baseball still in hockey now, how do you think that that would have changed the landscape of like modern day hockey? Do you think we would have seen like a Carolina Hurricanes win the cup, or, you know, like that's another interesting thing. And if we're as passionate about it now as we were then, would we be spending on a proportionate basis now? And what would those contracts look like, do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because it's all like relative to TV deals. Right. So like, you know, we all know the cap is going to skyrocket in like 2 or 3 years once this ESPN money really starts to kick in. Mm-hmm. But like in the 90s, it really just seemed like, you know, if you got like the right kind of rich guy, because it was so cheap on a relative basis for, you know, for the big boys, like, you know, Colorado is not considered a huge market. There's no reason they should be outspending, you know, like the Rangers or the Kings every year. Right. But for the most part, they did in the 90s just because like it was so easy back then to come in and spend a bunch of money.
That makes sense. And Ezra, if you think about it too, that might, like the TV deal thing, I don't imagine the Avs would be getting a lot of, like, no offense to the Altitude folks, but they can't even get their programs on every cable. You know what I'm saying? Every cable subscription. So, yeah, that we might not be celebrating a third Stanley Cup had things not changed, despite the fact that I think we did benefit from there not being a cap when we did have Pierre Lacroix, because I think he was one of the few owners who was willing to, like, fork it over, GMs who was willing to fork it over and find money in places to fork over to the team to make them competitive, especially when they were competing with the Red Wings, and the Red Wings were doing the same exact thing. So I think this discussion, when you really have it, it always just comes back to two basic things. What rules are they playing? And who's between the pipes? Because I think Waugh really does bring a kicker to, I think you could have McKinnon skating at 27 miles an hour coming towards Waugh, and I'm not saying Waugh and McKinnon one-on-one, Waugh wins, I'm not going to go that far because they're so far apart generationally and talent-wise. I will say though that if Waugh had the tools at his disposal that McKinnon and developmental tools, I think they would be close still based on their personality types. And that's why the rules matter and the era matters for this conversation. So I generally, the 2022 champs makes sense to me. And I think I agree with the fans on that vote. So I think we all do. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's so hard to compare across eras, but I genuinely, I think like any 2022 playoff team would destroy any 2001 playoff
team.
Right,
just based on like physical abilities and how.
Yeah, all of the players are just so much faster and better.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like all sports arguments in this, I have a friend who says that it's the Barney Stinson theory, where it's just new is always better.
Right.
When it comes to sports, like nutrition's better, like everybody's working out better. Like, you know, you go back to like the 70s, people were taking smoke breaks and intermissions.
Yeah. So. Do you think anybody was skating north of 25 miles an hour in the 1960s?
No. Yeah, like no way.
No, right. McKinnon.
60s, absolutely not. Yeah. 90s, definitely not.
Definitely. Yeah. Waugh was the first goalie who like dropped down. Like they were still figuring out how to play hockey.
The butterfly, until,
like,
the 1960s. Exactly. So.
Yeah, they went 100 years without thinking like, oh, I could cover the whole bottom of the toe.
Pads fit along the ice really well.
That's a great point. We're going to have a whole segment on why did it take so long for goalies to realize that they should be putting their pads on the ice.
We'll go goalie by goalie and say why that one
that's
was stupid.
So funny. That's so funny. Evan, what do you think? Sakic or McKinnon? head to head.
God, that's a really hard debate. I mean,
okay. How about this? They're not on a regulation sized rink. They're on like this super small. It's like a phone booth, and they just have to stick handle around each other. Who wins?
What?
I'm just trying to make it fair because McKinnon's just gonna skate around my beloved Joe Sakic.
I mean, that's what I was, yeah. That's what I was gonna say is that again, it's the same thing. New is better if you're gonna compare the two. But I mean, if you stick them in a phone booth, then, yeah. You know, I might give it to Sakic then at that point.
Yeah.
You know,
I guess it's a bad in a phone booth. Can you even hold a hockey stick? Like,
Sakic is an Avs legend for a reason. And
it's the release.
I think he would work better in those tighter scenarios than maybe McKinnon would. But it's, again, that's such a hard comparison. And kind of stepping back to the talk of the cap era, and if there was no cap, kind of getting back to that, because I had this idea pop in my mind. Vegas might be 2-time champs,
right?
If it wasn't for that already.
Good point.
With the amount of cap hindrance, I don't know if that's the best word to use, but the cap play that they'll use every once in a while, you know, they would use it to their advantage. And, yeah. You know, maybe it would have kept a couple more pieces together from that inaugural team that did make that cup run, you know, to the final, to then, you know, not blow it against San Jose in game 7 and make it past Montreal last couple years ago. So I don't know, but that part that is not Avs related, but that was also,
yeah,
just something
I think that's
up.
An interesting point. 'Cause like they're almost acting as if there is no cap in Vegas, just, oh yeah, we'll take on that contract. We'll find a way to trade in a very, very, very controversial way, like $8 million away somehow next year. That's kind of funny. They're almost like the opposite of the Avalanche. The Avs just go to the market and they're like, who has been just like underappreciated, probably pretty good, but has never really gotten a look? And then that's who the Avalanche pick up. And Vegas is just like, who's really good and who can we not afford? Let's go get that guy, and somehow they make it happen every time. So I wouldn't honestly be surprised. In our roundtable, I did predict that the Avs and the Knights would meet again in the playoffs, and I stand by that, and I think that will probably be really good for the Avalanche in terms of mindset, and kind of like, not that they need anything more than the cup to like incentivize, but back-to-back, you're going to need like little nuggets that get you going when you kind of don't want to go. And I think like a rematch with Vegas could really propel momentum in the playoffs. So I don't know. That's just what I think. Speaking though of playoff teams, well, potential playoff teams, we're going to bring Thomas Williams in. And Thomas was actually our, what would you say, working editor for a while there. Very, very good guy. We're super happy to have him on. He's from Hockey Wilderness SB Nation, the Minnesota Wild website. Thomas, how you doing, brother? Thanks for coming on.
Hey, good. Can you guys hear me all right?
Oh, yeah. You're loud and clear.
Perfect. Just testing a new setup. Yeah, doing well. How about you guys?
We're doing great, man. Thank you so much for coming on with us. And thank you again for all your help over the last couple months and year. It's been much appreciated. You kind of got us on a good path, and here we are. We're happy to talk hockey with you. I'll start, and I'll just ask you, the Wild, a lot of people see them as contenders this year. How do you feel about that? Do you agree?
Yeah, it. I think it comes to a point, because if you want to like describe a contender as someone like a top five team in the league, then I wouldn't say that. But if it would be someone that can make a decent run and can kind of surprise, they have to win a playoff series first. But they, as someone like that, can just kind of provide that little spark, and maybe in a playoff series against maybe a worse opponent, or if they get a good position or whatever, then they could kind of make a decent run and be that annoying team in the playoffs if they don't crumble around it. But yeah, like I feel like they'll still be a hard out to get basically, right. But I don't think that there'll be someone that you go into a series against a top team and be like, okay, well, this is like decided or anything like
gotcha. That. Gotcha. So you think that, like, reasonably speaking, they're definitely a playoff team, but what comes next is kind of to be seen sort of vibe, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that makes sense to me. And along with kind of the dynamic of this team and how they'll find success comes the Matt Dumba situation. And I think Ezra had a question for you regarding that.
Yeah. Hi, Thomas. I was wondering what you think is going to happen with Matt Dumba, because, you know, he's up for a contract extension if they want to keep him around, or maybe they ship him off. What do you think happens?
So I think this will definitely be his last year with the Wild. It's just a matter of one cap, because he, again, like you said, he'll be a free agent this summer. And also prospects, is like they have several defenseman prospects that are pretty much ready, like Brock Faber, okay. Big Ten top defenseman, top defensive player last year, will probably be turning pro this spring. Kalen Addison has made the team full time, and he's playing on the bottom pairing, so he could go in that right side immediately. And then you have guys like Carson Lambos, Ryan O'Rourke. Like, there's just like a list of players that kind of they draft and developed for the blue line specifically, and kind of with this in mind. Whether or not he finishes the season with the Wild is still to be determined, and I feel like it will be up until the trade deadline. Basically, what if they feel they're confident with Addison, and if they can get a decent replacement for the bottom pair or anything like that, and if they can get a decent like trade for him, because again, you're losing one of your core guys that has been there since 2012. Like, you're losing someone that has seen the last decade as like someone within the organization, and it'd be tough to go, but it's basically you try to recoup assets or whatever and play that game and do whatever you want. But again, at the end of the day, it's still losing a huge part of your leadership core. Like, he's wearing the A right now, and he has been for the last couple seasons. So it'll be a tough decision, but yeah, like I feel like no matter what, this will be his last year.
And you see it that way, even if the Wild are very successful, like say they're competing with the Avs for the division, do you think that they maybe reassess the situation, or is it just he's too big of an asset to get nothing in return, and you, like you said, it's just time, you have to move on?
Well, it'll be tough to see where they are. It all depends on Addison's play, if he can take that immediate jump and be in that top 4D. And then also it depends on if the Wild are, say, contending for the top central spot, then I feel like they'll just keep him and let him walk.
Right.
He's done enough. Again, like he's been involved in trade rumors for so long now. Like I feel like it's been like 4 years, like his name has popped up and unsettled here, whatever. So who knows what he'll get as a rental. And especially looking at last year, what defensemen got as rentals are kind of pretty high prices or surprisingly low. So it's all kind of a mystery. It's like, it's tough to say right now at the beginning of the season, but I feel like at that time, it'll be a decision that Bill Guerin will have to make. And I feel like the one that he probably will make, because I expect the Wild to be in the playoff race, in the playoff picture by that time. Right. And because he's also through two expansion drafts now has purposely made moves to keep Dumba. First, it was Alex Tuch moving away to keep Dumba, which now is kind of bad. But and then it was making the like flurry of moves around the Kraken draft to keep Dumba, and move out Soucy instead. But he's kept this guy around on purpose, and if he just trades him for like second and a third round pick or something, they'll kind of look bad on his part. So I think the more likely scenario, depending on team performance and just how Guerin's dealt with situations like this, is just keep him and then let him walk.
Gotcha. That makes sense. And I imagine if the scenario that I described happens, like a guy like Marc-Andre Fleury is going to tell him, come on, bro, let's just buckle up and go for the ride and see what we can do here. And speaking a little bit on Marc-Andre Fleury, Evan had a question about him. So go ahead, Evan.
Yeah, I was just thinking, I mean, obviously you got Fleury at the trade deadline last year. You know, rumors about retirement, or, you know, still kind of been floated around here and there. Even though you have Fleury for at least, you know, this full year, what are you hoping for, you know, for this full year with him in the net?
I'm hoping he's good, but but like
turns back, honestly, turn back like, the clock a little bit.
Well, the Fleury we saw last year in the Wild wasn't the best. I think he finished the regular season with like a 9-10 save percentage or something like that. Yeah, it's not the best. It's not a number one starter for a contending team, if you want to label them that. But I feel like if he could kind of know his role and know his position and play that 50 games, and if Philip Gustafson, the backup that they got in exchange for Talbot from the Senators, can kind of bring a little bit of a spark because he's still a young guy, then they could kind of depend on him more. But I feel like Fleury, the baseline is what we saw with the Wild, and hoping that they outscore their goaltending problems. But also, I really hope for more. Like expectation versus hope is different. My expectations that, especially seeing him allow 7 goals yesterday, isn't the best. it's right now, maybe it's not. I don't expect the best goaltending performance from Florida.
Well, I think you spoke to something that is kind of the whole point of why you bring in like a Fleury, which is that his ceiling is almost astronomical. Like at any moment, if you get the best version of Marc-Andre Fleury, you're getting one of the greatest goalies of all time, essentially. So I think like it makes sense for him to still be, oh, look at Ezra, he's saying no way, bro. I saw that stank face, Ezra. Come on, bro. But nonetheless, you're getting a really good goalie. We'll just put it that way, Ezra. But so I think that's kind of what you go for when you bring a guy like Fleury in. And last year, towards the end of the regular season and kind of going into the playoffs, it was starting to look like the Avs and the Wild might meet in the playoffs if certain things were to go a specific way. And it felt like there was kind of a rekindling to the rivalry that kind of stemmed from a previous playoff series of years back. What do you think? Do you think that the rivalry is kind of reborn, and do you think that that's good for both teams, or how does that work for you?
I think the rivalry has been, I think it's been reborn a little bit in the last couple of years, especially with Kaprizov coming,
right,
and kind of seeing as like, okay, the Wild's either the number two, or some even were pegging them to beat out the Avs. I don't know if that's cup hangover or anything in the standings, but I feel like they're obviously the one and two in the Central right now. No matter how you put it, I still think Wild will be number two, but not to just play favorites with you guys on this podcast, but
I'd agree. And I don't even like Wild.
That's the safe thing for you to say while you're here.
I think it's just like a rivalry stemming from like, these are two very good teams. One obviously has more star power, more flash, more prolonged success, kind of stable success, and has always just been hanging around forever, where the other's kind of an up and coming and still kind of a lot of question marks. But I feel like you're looking around the Central and like, who's going to take it from the Wild? Like, it's not going to be Nashville, Dallas, St. Louis, whatever, like Jets. Like, you're not kind of pegging them to beat out those teams in the standings after all 82 games. So yeah, I think it's kind of just been a battle, and I feel like every game this season will kind of be must-watch.
Yeah, I agree. And like you mentioned, Kaprizov kind of upped the ante, because I think it was more – what really lacked from the rivalry itself was like an elite-equaled level of talent. And as soon as Kaprizov came to the Wild, it was like, oh, okay, this guy's going to make the Wild a pretty formidable foe for years to come if they can keep him. So, you know, I just think I would love for this rivalry to continue and escalate, maybe not to the extent that the Red Wings and Avalanche rivalry escalated, but I do think it's good for the league and for both franchises to kind of pull people into the fight. And a part of that rivalry now comes the odd and awkward dynamic between Tyson Jost, the Colorado Avalanche fandom, and the Minnesota Wild, and how he came and went to the Wild. Jacob, you had a question for Thomas about Tyson Jost. Go ahead.
Yeah, I figure, you know, Tyson Jost is one of the more, I say, beloved of the Avs young core. Like, there were a lot of people who were really upset when he was traded. And so I figured it'd be remiss if we didn't ask about, you know, what would constitute success for Tyson Jost this year? Like, what are the expectations for his role on this team?
Yeah, so right now he's playing in Jordan Greenway's spot on the line that's Joel Eriksson, Ek, and Marcus Foligno, kind of like a checking line two-way. Was honestly one of the best two-way lines in the league for the last couple of years. But so he's been kind of playing on the left side a little bit and taking that role. And basically it's a top six role. It's technically listed as a third line, but he's basically in the top six by the amount of minutes that they play. But I feel like expectation overall, because I feel when Greenway comes back, he'll be slotted down potentially, maybe actually in the third line or anything like that. And I feel like just someone that you kind of depend on to provide offense in the bottom six and not be kind of a defensive liability.
Yeah.
And he's played well. Like I'm the only thing I'm scared about is with Jost is that if other young players kind of jump over him in the depth chart, like we have a very kind of similar player in Connor Dewar, kind of speedy, fast, good with the stick, but will like is a menace on the forecheck kind of guy, which I'm not sure if that's Jost's game right now, but it's just like it's other people will kind of jump him, and especially with the influx of young talent like Boldy and Rossi coming up, is that he might take a back seat and honestly might finish the year as a fourth line guy like he kind of was with Colorado for a little bit. So I feel like the expectation is really just like anything's icing on the cake. He's here. He's going to be playing a lot of games. He's going to be in the lineup. It's not that he'll be a healthy scratch unless he's like detrimental to that Wild winning games. But I feel like the expectation is very just like a mediocre, not mediocre. That's kind of mean, but like just an average, average, like maybe above average player. Like it's not that he'll be like, I don't think we're getting what a lot of Wild fans hoped is that when they saw the trade was like, oh, we're getting a former first round pick, all this stuff. He has the skill, blah, blah, blah. But I feel like if they're comfortable just getting a guy that is just a very solid player, can play kind of anywhere in the lineup, which is basically every Wild player ever. then we're happy. We're fine with that. If he becomes a detrimental, then there's players to replace him. So I feel like no matter what, and Evison will kind of be on top of that. But I feel like they're looking for a spot, because especially with Fiala's departure, that was a big thing of like they were pegging Jost to kind of take that role. And I don't think that he'll bring the scoring or anything like that. But yeah, like there's more opportunity here, and we'll kind of see how it plays out. But
yeah, I think he kind of suffered from timing with the Avalanche a little bit, in that the Avs were pretty top heavy in terms of elite talent when they drafted him, but at the same time kind of lacked depth, and so I think he, based on where he was drafted, kind of got thrusted into the, I would say, even just the roster in general, maybe sooner than what was probably best for his development. So I for one love Tyson Jost. Next to JT Compher, he was my favorite Av, which makes absolutely no sense, but hey, here we are. And so like I hope and think he might be like one of those late bloomer kind of guys who, once the development that he kind of should have gotten in the first 3 years sets in through experience in the league, I think he will find his way to make an impact. But I totally agree with you, and I think his role is a fourth line guy who's going to be solid on the PK. It's almost like really weird to me that he's so good on the PK but can be such a liability defensively 5-on-5. Can you maybe speak to why that's possible? How's that possible?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe it's just like he really likes the situation of being on the back foot. Like it's just being in that zone and trying to disrupt passes, where it's more from a static position other than free flowing 5-on-5 hockey where he can't really check hard.
Right. That would
make sense. You're not like body to body where you're trying to get in lanes and stuff. Yeah. Like honestly, it's really interesting. I think Jost is really probably one of like more interesting players in this Wild lineup, and kind of looking through the season, because we have expectations. We know where everyone else is going to lie. And people will move up the lineup. Boldy and Rossi will obviously get increased roles. Boldy with 2 goals in the first game, like he's already back. He's going to be crazy this year. But I feel like with Jost, it's very, very much so that he won't be the primary producer on any line that he's on. Right. He'll be a better player. He'll either be the second or third kind of guy. But yeah, I feel like he'll move around that lineup because they'll feel like the Wild is kind of set up in duos down the lineup. Like there's always the, not to go through the whole Wild lineup, but like Kirill and Zuccarello,
right.
Boldy and Frederick Gaudreau right now, and then the Duar and Duhaime, and then you have Foligno and Eriksson Ek. And it's just like these duos, and then the third guy kind of fills in with whatever. Yeah, so I feel like Joseph will be one of those guys in the bottom three lines and kind of just see what he can do. But yeah, I'm excited to see if with more opportunity how he takes it.
Yeah, and honestly, man, like I said, I wish nothing but the best for Tyson. I did not like some of the stuff that he kind of ran into after the Avs won the Cup. I thought that was in poor taste and didn't show a good side of Avs fandom. So definitely some deplorable stuff, and I definitely don't want to make it seem like we don't like Tyson Jost on this program. And, you know, I also don't want to make it seem like we don't like you, Thomas, just because you're a Wild guy. Thank you so much for coming on, brother. You're the best. We're going to have you on again. I hope the Avs and the Wild are pretty solid competitors, so we'll keep it going and get you back on. Maybe things will get a little more heated.
The first game of the season next week, I'm sorry if I chirp you on the Twitter account.
Please do, because I have so much fun. right on, all Thomas. Right. Thank you so much for joining the program, man. We'll have you on again soon.
All right.
Have a good one.
It's Thomas. Thanks.
Bye.
So that was Thomas Williams of SB Nation Hockey Wilderness, the Minnesota Wild site. Man, he's pretty privy with those Wild. He knew like the whole lineup just off the top of the noggin. That was pretty impressive. That's why he's the editor over there.
I think that's kind of a basic requirement for a reporter, right?
You think so? I mean,
yeah, we should all know the lineup.
Okay, so all right, let's test. All right, we'll test.
Oh boy, I'm excited to see this. Go on, Adrian.
Okay, well, it just depends. Is this the injury riddled Avs or is this the normal Avs?
I mean, I could do both.
No, I'm just kidding. I know you're capable. That was pretty cool, though. Love that guy. He's been really good to us, and we're thankful for that. So moving on, that was the game of the week, by the way, the Avs and the Minnesota Wild, which is coming up in a few days. It's going to be cool. Kaprizov and the Avs back going at it. So now that he's gone, maybe we can talk a little bit more candidly about our disdain for the Wild and what we're looking forward to in that matchup. I'll start with you, Evan. What are you looking forward to when the Avs first play the Wild this year?
Yeah, I mean, first off, it's always fun to play the Minnesota Wild. I remember going to a couple of those 2014, you know, first round games and hating them with every ounce of me. The teenage spirit in me was just like, F the Wild. And
absolutely,
you know, it's not as heavy as it is now. It's not as heavy now as it was back then, but you know, it's still a great rivalry, and I'm simply just looking forward to seeing an Avs team that is going to be well rested and going to hopefully be better than they were last night against Calgary. Because everyone was also looking forward to last night's game, but you know, with the Avs arriving to Calgary at 4 a.m. after opening night and raising the banner, you know, emotions were high. So it was always going to be hard coming into Calgary for their opening night. And seeing those two teams, you know, kind of live up to the hype and expectations that they have. So, I think I'm just hoping to kind of see a repeat, or not a repeat, but actually see two good teams play a good game of hockey. So
I'd say it's a repeat because that happened a lot last year towards the end of the season. We saw two really good teams just kind of going back and forth. And I think even the Avs in towards the end of the regular season when they lost like four straight, one of them was to the Wild in overtime on a pretty controversial call, whatever. But yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you too about like Calgary maybe being more of a potential rival, especially because, and I didn't really notice this until I saw him absolutely flatten. I knew this, but I didn't remember it until I saw Nikita Zadorov absolutely flatten Cogliano. So there's like another piece to why there may be some disdain coming from Calgary back towards Colorado in Nikita Zadorov. Ezra, what do you think? Do you think that the Flames are a more have a potential to be a stronger rival than the Wild, or do you think they're pretty neck and neck?
I think the Wild will end up being the bigger rival just because they're in division,
right?
And there's that history there already for the fan bases. With Calgary, though, I mean, Calgary's the stronger opponent, I think.
Yeah.
And they play a bigger game too. So I feel like, but if we're gonna look at for like, you know, like some actual animosity on the ice between the players, I think we'll see that more from Calgary Avalanche matchups. But as far as from the fan base goes, I don't think there's any bigger rival than the Wild.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to put it. Like, you'll probably see emotions come more to a head in an Avalanche Calgary matchup than you will in a Wild Avalanche matchup. But like you said, the level of competition is probably more there too. But
I mean, last night we saw like there was this play where Newhook was kind of down over the puck and Blake Coleman was coming in there trying to poke it out. And it was just like, he was just basically slashing Newhook in the face. And like the ref came and talked to him. And I mean, that kind of stuff that builds up.
Oh yeah.
They're not going to forget that.
It looked like that scene on Goon where he's like stopping the puck with his face at the post. Yeah. I was like, holy crap. Like, ow, stop doing that. That doesn't make any sense. Yeah. I totally agree with you. And Thomas is gone. Hi, Thomas. Jacob, I'm sorry. Jacob, tell me, like, you're a diehard fan. That's your picture of the banners that's behind you, like, from your seats. From your perspective, who do you want to see them beat more, the Wild or the Flames?
I mean, it's always going to be the Wild. Right. This is, you know, the rivalry ebbs and flows because the teams ebb and flow, but the hatred never wanes. Right. Like, this is the team that ended Patrick Waugh's career. Like, from that moment on, like, even before we got to, you know, the epic playoff series with, baby Duchesne and MacKinnon.
Right.
They're the bridge between the Red Wings. That's really like what their function is once the Avs Red Wings rivalry ended, like that was really what sprung up in its place. I do think Calgary has potential to be more heated just because like you have the Zadorov angle, you have the Kadri angle. They also have, you know, players like Milan Lucic, who is one of the easiest people in the world to hate.
He's got one of those faces.
Yeah. Plus like on top of it, the way the playoffs are structured, they would play the Flames in a Western Conference final, right, whereas they'd meet the Wild before. And so like, a Flames series has the potential to have much higher stakes than a Wild series. And so like, you know, now it's the Wild, but say in the next 3 years, they see the Flames twice in the Western Conference final, we might be singing a different tune at that point.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, I don't think like last year coming through the playoffs, the way the Avs did was like that easy per se, but I think compared to what they would likely face if things kind of settle the way we all think it will now, getting out of the division and getting into the Western Conference Finals should prove to be a lot more difficult this season just based on the teams that we might run into. Like you said, it could very well be like Nashville, who's going to get better, and they were already pretty good last year despite us just running right through them. They're going to get better, and that's a probable first-round matchup again. And then if you get Wild in the second round and then Calgary in the Western Conference, that's pretty much the gauntlet of the West right now. So I think
I'd put Dallas in there too.
Right.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Dallas has potential to be sneaky good this year.
They have the potential of the best goalie in the Western Conference.
Right. That's right.
That's a good point. That's a good, because
you got to love Robertson. That guy's great.
Yeah, they have like sneaky, they're always going to have a problem because they have those two big contracts and those dudes are not producing to the level of their contracts with Jamie Benn and Sagan. Yeah. So that's always going to be their,
they lost Klingberg too.
Yeah. Klingberg was an interesting one too. So they're going to have a tough time. I feel like they're going to be a lot like the Blackhawks in like 2 or 3 years where they're just going to have to buy everybody out and say like, all right, screw it. Let's just go.
I kind of like losing Klingberg for them, though. Like, I think Klingberg's a good player for sure, but he is so his defensive game is okay, but he's so like offensive minded, and they already have Heiskanen for that power play role.
I think they're going to be better off with somebody who plays defense a little bit better than
yeah.
him. And
yeah.
Somebody has to step up and take those minutes, of course. I don't know who it is exactly, but they might be better off.
And matchup-wise,
I think you're right.
Yeah, matchup-wise, if you're wanting to beat the Avs, I don't think, like, Edmonton kind of proved, like, you're not really going to outscore the Avs. You can try, mm-hmm. but you're not going to do it. You really are going to have to beat them the hardest way, which is what Tampa tried to do and probably got mm-hmm. the closest to successfully doing. But, like, yeah, I see a team like Dallas or Calgary more fitting that model, too, in terms of just being able to, like, play solid defense and have good goalkeeping. That's an interesting thing to think about. So, you know, we talked a little bit about Nazem Kadri and how it seems inevitable that we'll have some disdain for him based on where he ended up. Did any of that seep into your psyche last night, or was it all just kind of like sunshines and rainbows still? And I'll start with you, Ev.
I would say it was more so the latter. I mean, I don't think he was standing. I don't think he stood out that much last night. I think that partially might have had to do with the fact that the Avs overall didn't look great.
Right.
And Kadri is, I mean, that is still his first game, you know, as a Flame. So, you know, he might still be adjusting to Calgary and, you know, that new system. I still think he got an assist though, if I'm not mistaken, but I mean, he didn't look too noticeable and, you know, wasn't, I don't think he was, you know, super great, but I think, you know, as time goes on, he will continue to get better and, you know, work well with his new teammates and things like that. And there's obviously a lot of weight and expectations on his shoulders, you know, coming in to replace, you know, Johnny Gaudreau and Tkachuk. And, you know, those are 200 point players that are now gone. Kadri is, well, I don't think he's not going to be a 100 point player. Let's be real. But he's at least going to have to try and fill some
he's
sort
better,
of
He better be yeah, at least a 60-point player with the money he's making,
yeah.
or else Calgary is going to turn on him pretty quickly. He's going to be the Russell Wilson of this of Calgary pretty quickly. So, yeah. And I don't think that's going to happen. I think not only is he good, but he was smart in that he went from one really talented team to another really talented team. So he's not going to have to, like, carry the load for Calgary. If he had gone anywhere else, pretty much, he would have probably been like a 1C, and in this scenario he can slot, you know, back and forth between that and still be on the power play, much like he was with the Avs. They basically are just paying him to do exactly what he was doing, but for them and not the Avalanche. So I think you're right. Like, I think it'll start to show itself the more those games are competitive. Like, last night's game wasn't all that competitive. If and when Calgary and Colorado meet in Colorado, you'd expect there to be a tribute video and all that sort of stuff too.
Oh yeah.
And Ezra, absolutely. tell me a little bit, what do you think we can expect when Kadri comes back to town from Avalanche fans? Do you think he'll get the royal treatment, or do you think
I think so too. I mean, he definitely should. He was such a big part of the team. There, like, some of his comments, like leaving the group chat and stuff like that, maybe drew some animosity from the fans, but I don't think that anyone should let that get in their heads too much. It's all in good fun, and man, what a great guy to have on the team last year, and what an asset he was in the playoff run. You got to celebrate him.
Yeah, and I think, like, if you actually like Nazem Kadri, you know that the whole no freebies and leaving the group text is right on brand, and it should just stoke your love for him. And Jacob, tell me
that's why we love him.
Yeah, exactly. So tell me a little bit about that. Like, what do you think, even the guys who are still on the team, do you think that they had like a chuckle when he sent that text?
Oh yeah, for sure. But it, you know, that's the nature of a friendly competition, right? That, like, you know, it's one thing when you're, you know, you like, Alex, play pickup basketball, you go to the court, play some random people, you'll be competitive, but your friends show up, you want to beat your friends. Like, there, yeah, that gives you a little bit of extra gear. And so, like, that's how I would imagine the Kadri dynamic is with the Avalanche right now, where, like, they're real friendly, but as soon as they get on the ice, it is going to be very serious because they do not want to lose to each other.
Exactly. And, you know, I've more along the lines of like a group chat. Can you imagine if there was a group chat when Patrick Waugh left the Canadians? Do you think he would have sounded off on that thing and then said bye, au revoir? Oh my goodness.
I think so. Those texts would have been impossible to show on TV.
Yeah, exactly. Somebody'd have some serious dirt. Well, fellas, this has been an awesome episode. Thank you guys for joining me again. We're going to do it again next week. I'm not sure we're going to do it Friday or Saturday. I'll have to talk with you guys. We might have to change the date just for the week. I do have some family stuff. But thank you, folks, so much for watching. This is the Mile High Hockey Lab. My name's Adrian. I'm here with Evan, Ezra, and Jacob. We are from milehighhockey.com. Thank you, folks, so much for listening. Please smash that subscribe button. I think next week we're going to come at you from YouTube rather than Twitch. Sorry, Twitch. Don't cut our stream right now. we just think it might be a better place for everybody to access the program. So we'll be sending out that YouTube link next week. Be sure to follow us on social media. And thank you, folks, so much for watching. And thank you guys for joining me.